It's August 14th. We missed last week because a lightning storm took the power out of my house and we couldn't do the show, so we apologize. This week has given us an opportunity, however, to wrangle the ever-elusive Adam Herman. I choked. Adam Herman to talk about his prospect rankings. But before we get into that, this is Bantering the Blue Shirts. It is the best weekly podcast about the New York Rangers. My name is Joe Fortunato. I am joined, as always, by my host, Michael the Whale Murphy. Mike?
You've already choked on your own words. You called me your host instead of co-host. And you've insulted me. This is the first 48 seconds of the show, and you've done all these things wrong.
Now we're at 51 seconds. My percentage is getting better. And as I alluded to before, we are joined by Adam Herman. Adam, how are you doing?
I've been worse.
See, there you go. We're already off to a roaring start. Not a ton going on. Not a ton is really going to go on for the next couple of weeks. Traverse City's coming up, isn't it?
Yeah, and like
it's got to be right the end of August.
About a month.
Oh, is it really in September?
Yeah, I think it's like September 9th, September 10th or something.
That's late, isn't it?
Has there been anything on Shumakov or no?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, see, that was another thing we were going to talk. That was like the only thing we were going to talk about last week, and that. Adam is correct. September 7th to the 11th is the Traverse City tournament, which feels late. When does camp open? I thought camp was the middle of September.
Yeah, that's about right.
Huh. I thought there's usually a nice little break between Traverse City and.
I mean, if it ends the 11th and training camp starts like 15th or so, like
that's. I feel like that's close. It's a little close. Anyway, this has been a terrible start to the podcast, and I blame Mike. Adam Herman, prospect connoisseur for Blue Shirt Banter, did his prospect rankings for the New York Rangers. You can find them. It is, I believe, the fifth pinned story has every single ranking that he did. He ranked the top 40. That is 40 prospects. And before we get into specific players, before we get into maybe some of the questions that we have, which we might sprinkle in live, Michael. We might not wait till the end. We might just throw those in there.
Hot damn.
Thoughts, Adam, on the prospects group this year versus years past that you have done this for us?
Yeah, I mean, in years past, you kind of had to start making compromises of sorts, you know, once you got to number 5 or 6 in the rankings. And now I didn't really reach that point until, you know, 15 or so. So obviously that's great news for rebuilding team number one, but especially, you know, considering that it was only 18 months ago that, you know, this was a team trying to win the Stanley Cup, you know, and who had traded, you know, a bunch of prospects along with 4 first round picks. So it's a pretty tremendous turnaround over an extremely short period of time. And, you know, while I think people are going to be, you know, disappointed to learn that this rebuild is not even close to over, they've made up tremendous ground. And they're ahead of some teams that, you know, had started rebuilding way earlier. So it's a great start to the rebuild for sure.
That's one of the things that I think we discussed and Mike and I have discussed at length is that the Rangers, and I've kind of made this point in various different articles that have gone up on Blue Shirt Banter, but the point that I'm trying to make is the Rangers don't think they need to bottom out. So they feel like they bottomed out last year at the trade deadline and they skipped that process. And that's just not negotiable. You can negotiate whether or not you think that's true, but this is where the Rangers are. And the point that Adam continues to make is the Rangers are not doing all of this for an immediate turnaround rebuild. And I think the way that Gordon handled this offseason kind of proves that that's the case. So the only thing that I want to say, and I'll say it before, I know Mike has a question for you that I'll let him go say and ask once I'm done, is just that the Rangers feel that they're in stage 2 of a rebuild, which is bottom out of stage 1, and stage 2 is let's see what we can gather as we kind of try to grow the farm a little bit, grow the crops, if you will. And that's where the Rangers are right now. And they've gone from what is theoretically, I think, Adam, I'm going to agree with you, a bottom three prospect pool as of February of this year to, you know, Corey Pronman is doing his he's doing his rankings for The Athletic. I have a funny feeling the Rangers are going to finish. He had asked, like, where do you think people, what your favorite team is going to finish? And I thought the Rangers were going to be anywhere from 9 to 13 was my range. And for Gordon to do that from a team that probably, like, their best pro, who was your number one last year? Was it Shea?
Nah, he was graduated at that point. I had Anderson.
That's right. Before Anderson and Hedl, it was Shea and Buchnevich and Shestjorkin were really the only actual prospects.
Yeah,
Graves was up there, wasn't he? He was like in the top five. That's how crazy it was.
I was looking at the 2016 list, which is only 2 years ago. You know, I had Ryan Graves number three, and I even wrote at the time that, you know, look, that didn't work out. But nonetheless, I wrote at the time, you know, I think Ryan Graves can become a third pairing defenseman, and it was just that he was very close in his development. And, you know, and that said a lot more about the state of the prospect pool, that, you know, a guy that I thought had a good chance of becoming a third pairing defenseman was so high up the list, you know, whereas now, you know, not quite the same, but similar-ish guys in Ryan Lindgren or
Mike's John, favorite prospect.
Yeah. Or John Gilmore. Those guys are in my 20s. So it's a tremendous turnaround. And, you know, here's, I think the fun thing to look back on in hindsight is, you know, at the time of the deadline, we were saying, you know, what a great job by the Rangers to, you know, admit defeat so early and, you know, not try to get one more run out of it, even though there were a lot of people who thought they should. Now we can see the first, you know, consequences of that decision, and they're positive. You look at the players I have ranked 5 through 8 in my rankings. Those were all players. Nils Lundqvist, who was drafted with the pick from Tampa Bay. Keandre Miller was drafted with the picks from the Rick Nash trade from Boston, and then the Grabner second round pick to trade up. Brett Howden, the McDonough trade, and then Yegor Rakov in the Grabner trade. So that's prospects 5 through 8 in my rankings that they're not in the prospect pool right now. They're not in the prospect pool if the Rangers don't make that decision. Not to mention Libor Hayak at 11. So look, we're starting to see the benefit of the Rangers, you know, kind of avoiding what a lot of teams deal with, which is kind of, you know, they rebuild because they're left with no choice. You know, the Rangers kind of skipped that step, and right now, they're miles ahead of where they could have been if Jeff Gordon and the Rangers management were, you know, a lot more emotional in their decision making or optimistic in their decision making. So, yep.
Mike, you had a question for Adam. I'm assuming about what he just discussed, but go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was curious about, you know, because we, when the rebuild was starting to happen, Adam, and, you know, we look at history, and it feels like, as a general rule, you want to take picks over prospects in trades, right?
Yep.
Because you don't really, if the teams are willing to give up prospects, that normally means that they've fallen out of love with them, or, you know, that they consider them to be expendable, which is not, generally not a good thing. I'm curious how you feel, you know, as a group. I mean, it is kind of obviously a mixed bag in terms, you know, Rob O'Gare is a part of the group. But, you know, how do you feel as, you know, with especially guys like Howden and, you know, Rykov, how do you feel about the group of prospects, not picks, that came back on the debt, you know, all the deadline deals now that it's been a couple of months and we have a better idea of who some of these guys are?
Right. I wrote on Twitter quickly a week or so ago. I think Yegor Rykov, the defenseman they got in the Grabner trade, I think I understand the Devils' perspective on that, and that they didn't think they were going to be able to, or that at least it was going to be a hard process to get him to come to the New Jersey, whereas that's a lot easier for the Rangers just because of the appeal of the team, the appeal of the city. They now have a nice Russian conglomerate of players. But nonetheless, I think that's
teammate Shestjorkin.
Yeah, Exactly. And I think that's going to look really good down the line. You look at the returns on, you know, what are, we can debate Grabner's, you know, role his and his ability, but, you know, we're optimistically talking about a middle six winger. You know, those are guys who bring back second round picks by themselves and usually late second round picks. And, you know, to get, I think it was 48th overall, 47th overall, somewhere in that, I think it was 48th, you know, plus a defenseman who has top four upside and, you know, not just a kind of what if upside, but this is a guy who's in his 20s and proving himself in the KHL. That's an incredible return. The McDonough and Miller trades kind of, it's the opposite. I don't think the Rangers blew it. I think Brett Howden is a really good prospect. I think, you know, as I wrote, I think you're looking at someone who could be a really great third line center or maybe, you know, fringe second line. Libor Hayak, as I wrote, I think number four upside is what we're looking at there. To give up McDonough with a year left on his deal and then, you know, JT Miller, good young player, do I think they got enough there? I'm not convinced. Mm-hmm. I also thought Tampa Bay had a few other prospects. You know, everyone talks about Braden Point and Sergachev. That was never realistic, but I like Boris Kachuk a lot. I think Taylor Radish is a good prospect. There are a few others. So I don't think they optimized it there. But, you know, I think as we discussed at the time of the trades, that while obviously this wouldn't have been a smart strategy, if the Rangers had just gotten rid of all these players for nothing, it would have been a step in the right direction, just because it would be admitting, hey, this isn't the group that's going to win us a cup. It's time to move on. So, yeah. So look, I think, as you said, you're giving up upside when you're going for, that's the trade-off, is that,
yeah.
You know, when you're talking about late first round picks and early second round picks, these are guys who, you know, if you're drafting right, they have first line, you know, top pairing upside, but it's a long ways off. Whereas you look at Brett Howden, you look at Yegor Rykov, you look at Libor Hayek. These are guys who, you know, no guarantees, but they look like strong possibilities, very strong to be NHLers and, you know, not just fringe ones. So, you know, legit long NHL careers. So I think it could have gone worse. I think it could have gone better, but certainly it stocked the prospect pool.
The Nash trade is another one where Lindgren, I don't even know. I try to think back to the Nash trade and think about what the centerpiece of that deal was, and I think it's the first round pick, to be honest with you, because Look, Lindgren is an unbelievable skater, and I think that's something that Mike and I have talked about a lot, and it's something that I'm going to continue to talk about. The New York Rangers have a pretty specific draft strategy, and it is to get athletic players who are unbelievable skaters. Yep. And if you look at Kravtsov, if you look at Keandre Miller, if you look at Niles Lundqvist, even Lindgren, who's a fantastic skater, Hayek as well, these are bigger players who can move. And that's not necessarily something that the Rangers were looking at even a couple of years ago. And one of the things that I think Adam has gotten some flack for, and obviously time will tell, the Hayek, Adam's not as high on Hayek as some other guys are. Some people agree with Adam, some people don't. This is the nature of evaluating prospects. But I do think that Brett Howden certainly maybe took a step up from what people expected him to be. Even Corey Pronman said that Howden, sort of his explosive season this year, opened some eyes as well. And I think the Rangers, they obviously evaluate Hayek as a can't-miss guy, since he was absolutely forced into that deal to be to even facilitate it in the first place. And listen, in the World Junior Championship, and we need to avoid this short-term bias where you're looking at one specific tournament in just a couple of weeks and, okay, that's going to be the make or break. But Hayek was the man for that Czech Republic team that had a surprise bronze medal finish. I mean, he was playing, I think he averaged close to 30 minutes a night. He had over a point per game. He was just a monster. And that's the guy that the Rangers envision. And if that guy is there, great. I've spoken to some people who think Hayek is that guy, and I've spoken to some people who agree with Adam that Hayek is a fine prospect. Nobody's saying that he's, you know, a throwaway, but maybe more a number four guy than a number two guy, if you will. So I do, you have something to add on that?
Well, just, you know, again, he looked very good at the World Junior Championships, but number one, he was a 19-year-old in a U-20 tournament. Number two, it's a small sample size. And number three, he looked good, but also he's getting 30 minutes because that Czech defense was brutal outside of him, you know? So it's kind of, you know, a situation where if you have five Rob O'Gara's and, you know, and one Brady Shea, Brady Shea's getting all the minutes, you know, regardless.
We don't even want one Rob O'Gara.
Right. Well, I digress. Point being, you know, they played him 30 minutes because they didn't really have much of a choice. So, I think he has plenty of value, but I think that's also kind of that situation where he looked better because of what was around him or not around him. But I digress. You know, the thing about the trades was that, as I already pointed out, these were necessary moves and it stocked the prospect pool. But the Rangers, you know, answer to the rebuild, they were never going to get, you know, that one player that turned around the rebuild, that makes or breaks the rebuild in these trades, because that's just, with, you know, with certain exceptions, that's just rarely how it works.
You're not going to get a Brayden Point. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, once in a while, you know, Calgary acquired Jerome McGinley for Joe Nieuwendyk. You know, once in a while that kind of thing happens, but you know, that you can't bank on that. You're just trying to, you know, add numbers, add quality players who can be, you know, long-term NHLers. And then you gotta find other ways to, you know, add the guy you think can be the best or the second best or third best player on a Stanley Cup contender.
Yeah, and listen, the Rangers totally, I mean, it's almost alarming how quickly they turn this around, because something that Adam mentioned before that we were getting into, Lundqvist is the fifth-ranked prospect, and this is all according to Adam's rankings. Keandre Miller was the sixth-ranked prospect. Hayek was the 11th-ranked prospect. Howden was seventh, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
So you have those four guys in the top 11 who are only here because of trades the Rangers made in February. Yep. And I'm forgetting Rykov, who was eight. So you're talking about these guys that are just thrust into the top 10 of this system, and you're not even including Anthony DeAngelo, who the Rangers got a year prior, who's ninth. And I get it. There's certainly aspects and risks to each and every one of these players, but I don't understand the anger towards what the Rangers have done. You may disagree with some of the players they got back. I think Adam's brought up some good points about Hayek. He's brought up some good points about Howden. Lindgren, we've kind of discussed ad nauseum on this podcast, and in general is just, you know, it's interesting how players get hyped up for something they're not.
It would
not
be really great if Lindgren turns into a third pair D.
Yeah, but that, and that's, you know, that's the point. Like, it's unbelievable. I saw somebody was arguing with me on Twitter the other day that he was like of Ryan McDonough light, and it wasn't McDonough that they used as a comparison, but like a big guy who can throw hits and like can put up offense. And just there's nothing, you're not coming up with, you're just like pulling from the air like fairy dust. It's not the way that it works.
The thing I always say, you know, about that kind of thing, and look, like, teams make mistakes, so we're not going to just directly appeal to authority and wipe our hands of it. But if Ryan Lindgren was this, you know, great top prospect like that, Why is Boston acquiring Rick Nash? Why aren't they going after Pacioretty or Erik Karlsson or Mark Stone? You know, if that's the kind of package they were putting together there, they could get them, you know, and obviously, you know, we love Rick Nash here, so it's not about Nash himself, but why wouldn't they be going after, you know, a more significant player if that's what they had there? So that's, you know, I find it very hard to believe that. Again, teams make mistakes, but if Boston felt that he was that kind of player, teams always value their own prospects and players more than other teams do. So if they felt Ryan Lindgren was that, you know, why would they be trading him for a Rick Nash rental that they didn't even necessarily particularly need? So, we'll see. But
you pointed out in your prospect rankings that, you know, Lindgren, you know, I think people think two things: he can skate, and he's a big,
he can hit. He's big and tough.
And that's, but the thing is, as you pointed out in when you talked about him, Adam, is this is a, he's 6 foot. I mean, this is not like a towering kid, right? Mm-hmm. This is not a, like, I mean, I'm sure he's, you know, rock solid or whatever. You know, he might already
thick,
have that kind
nice
of
and thick.
Yeah,
adult very frame. Yeah, but he's not exactly the biggest guy in the ice at 6 foot.
Yeah.
And the other thing that strikes me about him is that he's a left-handed D, and it feels like, in terms of the
Like, from the scope of the organization, there is a lot there on the left side in terms of defensive prospects, which does not bode well for him having a future in the NHL. I'm not trying to write him off. I mean, he's 20. I'm not trying to sink his ship before it gets out of the harbor here, but, like, I'm just a little skeptical of him as a prospect. But again, as a whole, I'm with you there. Like, there was enough that they got back in all those trades where, like, there's no one from that group who's really sexy to me, except, you know, I like Hayek a lot, but after reading, you know, the things you had to say about Rykov, I feel like, okay, yeah, like, I understand your perspective on that one. But with that being said, like, prospects doesn't just mean, you know, first line wingers and first pair defense. Like, you need four good lines. You need three good defensive pairs. Right. And I feel like the Rangers did a good job just adding to a pool that was just god-awful. And as we've seen with, you know, the Wolfpack and all the crap that's been on the ice in Hartford for the last couple of years, like, this feels like this is a very big, like, it's not just a step in the right direction. It's like a long jump in the right direction from where we were even a year ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, the thing that, you know, I talk about a lot is, you know, people say, oh, well, you know, the Rangers shouldn't rebuild because look at the Islanders and look at the Oilers and look at the Sabres, you know, and, you know, they added these great players. And
look at the Islanders, who had the same number of points the Rangers did, and look at where those two teams are since the Rangers made the divergence to sell.
But not even that, you know, the point being like, oh, well, you know, why rebuild when it's not, you know, look at these teams that, you know, tried it and they're bad. The reason those teams are bad is because the Oilers added, you know, they added Jordan Eberle and Taylor Hall and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and that's it. You know, they just kind of hoped that they were going to add these superstars and that was going to carry them. They did not have
us too.
They did not have those second tier prospects and those third tier prospects, those guys that could, you know, be a good third line center and a good number four defenseman. And so, yeah, that's when I look at Brett Howden or Yegor Rykov or Lieber Hayek, you know, or even Lion Rundgren, those guys are going to fill in the cracks. You know, maybe not all of them, but it's a numbers game. Some of them are going to do that, and that's what you're hoping for there. You're not hoping, you know, these guys are going to, you know, have their numbers raised to the rafters in 20 years. It's that these are the, you need to, you know, find your elite talent. And but once you do, you also need that depth, and that's what these guys can provide for the Rangers. That can, you know, that can be the difference between being the Islanders and wasting John Tavares' prime, or, you know, the difference between that or being a contender. And so I think the Rangers, you know, they addressed that part of the equation through the trade deadline, and now they kind of have to solve the other piece of it.
And that's another good point, too, because when you think about, like Mike said, you're not just stocking the farm of elite players, right? No team is doing that consistently. Yep. But if you look back at why the Rangers went to the Stanley Cup final in 2014, it was because of depth up and down the lineup. But more importantly, it was because of these players that they kind of groomed into these roles. And one of the key examples that I give is Brian Boyle. Brian Boyle was an absolute staple on that fourth line with Dom Moore. It was one of the main reasons why the Rangers did what they did to get to where they got to. Mm-hmm. And I look at Tim Gettinger, who Adam has as his 15th ranked prospect, and I see a similar type player in him. And I think, Adam, you've actually made the comparison between the two players as well. They kind of play similar games.
It was a scout who pointed that one out to me, actually, and made total sense, but yeah.
But you don't draft a guy like him in the fifth round expecting a top-line player, and I don't think he's expected to be a top-line player. But you have to, if you get those guys, and if he turns into a Brian Boyle-type player for the New York Rangers, it's an immense success.
That's a home run.
So it's not just about the guys who are in the top five. And look, we can argue this, and I'll let Adam say this after I'm done. For all the flack that we gave about Anderson not being the BPA last year and being a player that, while a great prospect who you should be very excited about and is number three, I think, in the Rangers prospect rankings, the Rangers sacrificed upside for polish. This year, the Rangers went for upside to an extreme. Yep. They had a Krafstoff ranked higher than everybody else. That's, again, at least they swung for talent. You can make whatever argument you want about him versus Wahlstrom. The Rangers swung on talent. K'Andre Miller, there might not have been a bigger boom or bust pick in the first round. So again, you're going in that direction. And if your safe pick is Lundqvist, who was a 17-year-old playing in the SHL.
Yeah.
Again, I think the Rangers, you may disagree with the players the Rangers picked. I personally think the Rangers had a fantastic first round. I think they did exactly what we would have asked for them.
I agree. When you look at it that way, Joe, it's like we criticized, you know, too safe, or, you know, like you wanted the polished guy, you know what he is with Anderson last season, right? And then this time around, it's they swung for the fences with, you know, Kravtsov. They hope that's the guy who they knew something about that everyone else didn't. And then Keandre is just, there's so much potential there. But, you know, there's also a chance that he just doesn't put it all together. But, yep, like, in terms of athletics and character and, like, all these signs, you know, he's only been a defenseman for a short time. Like, there's a lot of just, like, the word is, like, raw, 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 right? Mm-hmm. Like, he needs development, but that's fine because he's a kid. Right. And if it works out, it's going to be a great pick. And the more I look at that first round as a whole, those three prospects, the more I've kind of embraced the idea, like, yeah, I might not agree with them taking, you know, Kravtsov, but, like, as a group, considering where they went, it's pretty good to me. It, like, I like enough about it.
The other just main point that I want to make that I think is really important, and Adam kind of brought this up, and I thought he said it very eloquently when he was discussing Elias Anderson. It's okay to criticize these players and be realistic about them without this nonsense of them being a bust. And Anderson seems to be the guy that gets lumped into this immensely. And oh, one God. Of the things that frustrates me is that if Anderson does not put up 50 points next year, and by all expectations, he won't.
No.
There is going to be a portion of the fan base that is going to turn on him because they've been conditioned to think, oh, he's the greatest thing in the world.
Yep.
And the flip side of that is that, let's take Ty Ronning as an example, right? Mm-hmm. This is a guy who had 61 goals in 70 games last year in the WHL. Think about that for a minute. It's unheard of levels of offense. Yep. He's 22nd in Adam's rankings. And there's a reason for that. You need to take everything into consideration with a player. And nobody's saying Anderson's going to be a bad player. Nobody's saying Anderson, what turned into this, oh, he's a bust, was quote unquote putting a ceiling of 60 points on him, which again is, if he is a 60 point player, he is a fantastic hockey player.
Yeah.
But you need to be realistic about what it is you're looking at. And that's the other thing with Lindgren, where, you know, you have these expectations that people have of, oh, this is going to be a guy who's going to be prowling the blue line. He's going to be, you know, Jeff Bookaboom. A, the game is different. And B, you've now set an expectation that's impossible to reach. And when they don't reach it, they're immediately a bust. Yeah. And we've gone up and down with hundreds of players. Honestly, dozens of players have been put into that category. And it's insane. Buchnevich is in that category right now. As a bust, he's not as good as everybody thinks he is. And they're like the players that he's compared to in the per 60 metrics would blow your brains out. So I think as a whole, we need to be a little bit more realistic. And that's one of the reasons why I find it really funny when people are yelling at Adam or in the comments about how, you know, this player's ranked too low or this player's ranked too high or what are you doing with this? You need to be realistic about what you have. And you can say Anderson's going to be if Anderson's a fringe first line center, if he's a second line center, if he's a 60 point player, he's not a bust. It's a wonderful, you can be excited about him and think that's what his talent is and not think he's a bust and also think he was not the best player available to be taken. And the reason I say that is because you can make the argument that Kravtsov was not the player to take at 9, that he should have taken Wahlstrom. Gordon should have taken Wahlstrom. The Rangers, for whatever reason, and this is something that I'm going to ask you about, Adam, seem to have a new direction where they want players who are playing in a men's league as an adult. If you look at a lot of the picks the Rangers are making from European leagues later on in the draft, it's similar type players who are in, you know, a professional league on one level or another. And obviously, Lundqvist and Kravtsov were the two big ones this year. But Anderson last year and Hedl last year as well. The Rangers have made it a priority to take players who are playing in a men's league, and I don't think that's a stupid strategy at all. But again, just be aware that Kravtsov, he is what he is. And Wahlstrom will be what he is. And Anderson will be what he is. You can believe all these things and still have the opinion that, huh, maybe that wasn't the player that should have been selected. And in terms of Kravtsov, maybe I'm just the eternal optimist. He's really grown on me a lot. And I was desperate for Wahlstrom. I was holding Kalen to make sure that I wouldn't have a meltdown if they didn't take Wahlstrom. But it is what it is. But Adam, have you seen sort of that change in direction from the Rangers to looking to those professional, experienced players?
Yes and no. I mean, look, I think if Quinn Hughes is on the board at nine, they're taking Quinn Hughes. I mean, he played college, so not quite junior, but not exactly men's league either. But I think it's a case-by-case basis. I think certainly the Rangers look at what Lundqvist and Kravtsov did against men and say, you know, look, if they're doing that now, what's it going to be in 5 years? I think both have tremendous upside. I think it and, you know, of course, Hedel and Anderson, when you're looking to kind of hedge your bet, and Anderson aside, I don't think they're hedging a bet per se in terms of leaving upside on the table when you're looking at Hedel or Kravtsov or you know, kind of Lundqvist. But it's a lot easier to feel confident in a guy who's holding his own against the top players in the world outside the NHL, you know, versus like, you know, guys who are beating up on teenagers in junior. So certainly I see the rationale there, though. You know, it won't surprise me next year if the Rangers go for, you know, two guys in the USHL, if that just happens to be the guys who are best, you know, the top players at that time. So I think there's definitely merit to it.
Adam, outside of your top 11, because I'm cutting Hayek out of this. Okay. What prospect do you think is the highest overall ceiling?
You stole my idea, Jeff.
I did. I took your question.
That's a good one. First, let me just backtrack a bit. I forgot to say something I wanted to say, which is that, you know, I had Wahlstrom fifth. I think it was fifth in my rankings, and I had Kravtsov 14th. That outside of Lundqvist, that's the pick I have the least issue with, of all the picks. If I could, you know, redo the draft for the Rangers in the way I wanted to,
yeah,
I think that would be one of the last picks I would touch. So I think, you know, we'll see. Wahlstrom would have been my pick, but I have no problem there.
They swung on talent. You know what I mean? Like, exactly, you can make whatever argument you want. You can say that there was a different player on the board, but they actually swung on talent.
Yep.
This was not like, he's a leader, or like the stuff that you heard about Anderson, where no one was really talking about his game last year. Everybody was talking about like the intangibles, which, again, great, but you can get a guy like that in the sixth, seventh, or undrafted.
Yep.
But they swung on talent. You might disagree with it. It may not work out, but in the moment, right now, before we know anything, it's a defensible pick.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and with Anderson, it was kind of, there were two, three, four guys on the board, you know, and with Kravtsov, it's Wahlstrom. Wahlstrom aside, I think Kravtsov was a perfectly good pick. He might have been my pick there. But I digress. As to the question, who outside, I think it was the top, what'd you say?
11. Because I want to cut off Hayek.
Sure. Okay. Who has the highest ceiling?
Highest ceiling.
Honestly, if you include Hayek in there, he doesn't have the highest ceiling, I don't think. But, let me look at my list. Yeah, it's probably, you know, goalies are kind of weird because they're just kind of their own enigma. But Adam Huska, Adam Huska probably has the highest ceiling. I think he can be an all-star goaltender. And I think you look at NHL goaltenders, you look at the top guys, it's you know, Igor Shestorkin and Thatcher Demko in Vancouver and Ilya Samsonov for Washington. I think Huska's in that second tier. You know, he's not an elite goaltending prospect, but I think he's a guy who, you know, is a legit goaltending prospect and can be an all-star goaltender. I've heard great things from, you know, people in the goaltending community. From my own eyes, you know, what I've seen data on him that I don't think anyone has access to. And he is just absolutely phenomenal. And kind of the scary thing is that, you know, this is a guy who is playing in Slovakia, which isn't at this point in time, not a great developer of talent. He was playing in the USHL for an okay USHL team. And then he's with UConn Hockey, which I'll do, you know, no do all due respect to them, it's, you know, they're not a powerhouse, and even still, this is college coaching. You got a lot of part-time or volunteer coaches working with the goaltenders. So if he's this good now and he's still incredibly raw, what can he do once he's in a professional environment with daily coaching from a professional goaltending coach? So I think for him, he's got the highest ceiling of
all right, one. If you have to take a skater, Adam.
Sure.
I want to hear about a skater.
Sure, fair enough.
Goalies are voodoo.
Yeah, goalies are voodoo.
Before you answer that question for Mike, that alone, I think, needs to highlight how awful the Olaf Lindbom pick was at 39.
Of all the picks, that's the one that drives me up the wall.
If you look at the Rangers prospect pool right now, and Adam's done a wonderful job kind of laying it out, Shesterkin was taken in the fourth round. I mean, think about that. And that's even that is theoretically high for a goalie, you know, all things considered. Huska was taken in what? I think it was the
seventh round.
Oh, he was the seventh round. Oh, yeah. Even further back. If you, and Mike and I did this, if you go back through the picks that the Rangers have made super high for a goalie, Dan Blackburn, which didn't work out, you can make the argument that it's because of the, you know, I think he had a nerve issue, didn't he? He got hit with a puck or something. Yeah. He had a nerve issue in his hand. Oh my God. Halvorsen. Halvorsen was a second round pick that,
Montoya,
again, didn't work out. Montoya, again, didn't work out. So you don't have to go. It's kind of like running backs in football. Yeah. You don't have to go early to get these guys.
Yeah.
Huska, theoretically, is an NHL goaltender taken in the seventh round. And you look at all the talent the Rangers left on the board, and the Rangers traded a second round pick to get Miller.
Yeah, there's just
and no they used the one they had on a goalie and passed up on a slew of falling first round talent. Mm-hmm. It is inexcusable, and I don't care. Like, I wish, and this is another thing. Like, I wish you can believe that and still wish Lindbom the best, and he's still the 19th best prospect in the Rangers system according to Adam. But it's an awful pick. It's an awful pick, and I don't care that Benoit Allaire loved the pick because. Who was it? Antoine Lafleur?
Yeah.
Lafleur was taken in the second round. Yeah, and that, he was another one that Allaire was like jumping up and down. The Rangers got him. I don't even know if he played in an AHL game.
That's not true. It's not true. I have it on like as good of authority as there can be. I'll leave it at that.
but nonetheless, it was reported that was said. Yeah, I'm not making that up.
No, I believe you. I'm just saying I have it on as good of authority as there possibly can be.
Because I actually
want to hear about the skater.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I just wanted to make that point.
Point being, you can add goaltenders in bulk through, you know, cheaply.
Absolutely.
And
that's plus, I had to give Adam time to think, Mike. You're just throwing these bullet questions at him.
I asked him that question like 20 minutes ago, Joe.
Yeah.
He's not ready.
I'm ready.
He's ready.
You know, this is kind of, you know, maybe a part of a bigger discussion in terms of where the Rangers need to go from here, but there's not a ton of high upside after... There's plenty of upside in that top 10, but after that, I think that's kind of an issue the Rangers need to look at is, you know, I look at, you know, for instance, the Toronto Maple Leafs. They have a guy like Jeremy Bracco, he's not in their top 10 maybe, but he has high upside, and the Rangers kind of need to fill their ranks with that. You know, I didn't love their second and third round picks this year, and that's kind of where you can address that. Those guys in the, you know, 13 to 20 range who, you know, can have that, oh, hey, like if things go right, it's not, you know, likely, but they have that upside. But anyway, I guess it's still Sean Day. You know, is he going to be, you know, an all-star defenseman? I at this point, I would say no, probably not. But it's just the things that he can do, you can't teach. The way he skates, the way he carries the puck, you just can't teach that, you know? So...
He has all the tools in the toolbox.
Yeah, and
he just doesn't know how to use the tools.
He's the kind of guy, when we talk about development and coaching and such, like, I think that's very overrated. I think for a lot of guys, it's, you know, like JT Miller was going to be a very good NHL player. I don't think there was anything that, you know, you can look at what he did in the OHL and in Hartford where he was fine-tuning parts of his game, and maybe that's the difference between him being a 55-point player or a 48-point player. But I think for a lot of guys, it's, you know, they're going to be what they're going to be. But I look at Sean Day, He's the kind of guy that coaching can make or break him. I fully believe that. I think coaching can decide whether he's a number three defenseman or whether he's in the ECHL in 3 years. So that'll be an interesting one for sure to see in Hartford. I'm guessing he's going to be in Hartford this year, and it'll be very interesting to see how he adapts to that and how the Rangers are able to take his talents and turn him into the kind of player he could be.
Mike, did you raise your hand for a reason?
It's kind of a random question. Like, sure. I was gonna say after the Lindbom pick, I know Nico Gross was a pretty unpopular pick in the fourth round, right?
Yep.
Is that would you say that you took the most, like? I don't want to put words.
I have an answer to this question. We tore into him already. The correct answer to this question.
Well, yeah, I was wondering, like, if the Lindbom pick at the second round at 39th overall was, like, let's say that was, if you could redo any pick, right?
Yeah.
But then again, you know, maybe that might not make as much sense to phrase it that way, because you could get a player that you like a lot more in the first round. But
yeah, at 39.
Swing and miss after Lindbom, do you think that's Nico Gross in the fourth?
Well, pound for pound, I think it's Simon Kjellberg in the sixth round.
Drag him right through the mud. Let's do it.
You know, people are going to say, you know, oh, it's the sixth round. Who cares? Blah, blah, blah. Well, first, again, I'm saying pound for pound, right?
But you know what? I need to add something to that, though. The Rangers passed on Liam Kirk.
Yeah, well, selection. I could run down a whole list of players, and that's the thing is, like, look, six-round picks are long shots, but you don't want a guy who's, you know, kind of written off on day one. You want that to be, okay, you know, like, if it's in 2 years, you know, all right, this guy didn't kind of turn out into anything. Well, like, you know, I look at someone like Brad Morrison a few years ago, or, you know, I'm trying to look at my list to see who's in the Rangers system that might fit that.
Well, we just made the point about not having those high upside guys.
Right, you like, gun for them if you can.
You can swing for the fences in those late rounds. You can
Hellberg
swing for
was
guys
a,
where,
a scout yeah. son who literally you could have either taken in the seventh round or you don't take him at all and you sign him after the draft, and then he's still in the system and you didn't waste a damn draft pick on him.
Well, it's just like, I mean, again, you look at the comparables for him. We're looking at a guy that, like, hey, if he beats the odds, he's becoming a number seventh defense.
He's Henrik Tillander if he beats every odd possible.
But I digress. You know, it's... You don't want to pick a guy that on day one is written off, you know?
No,
even if
exactly.
that you want to give yourself a chance. That's it. I don't think they gave themselves a chance with that pick, you know?
Ugh, God, that makes me so mad.
So that's
so
what it is.
So is Nico Gross your third least favorite pick then?
rank the picks in descending order of worst to
reverse.
Best.
Yeah,
like
I will say this.
Yeah,
I know you were, and I was kind of with you. Joey Keane seemed to be an unpopular selection when the Rangers made it.
Yeah.
Some of the underlying metrics of his, at least from that, the tracking data from Mitch Brown are fantastic. And again, I'm using Corey Pronman as an example. There are certainly people who have other opinions, but Corey was impressed with him. Again, super small sample in the quick tournament this summer. Right. So. You know, again, that's a defendable pick. You know what I mean? The Rangers obviously see something. He's a little bit of an overage. He still put up good numbers. His underlying numbers were great. Let's all hope that they looked at the underlying numbers because that means they're taking a step in the right direction.
Yeah.
Gross was someone that the Rangers were reportedly interested in like 2 months before the draft. Adam, even Ross Cohen, who is one of the prospects, is a friend of the site, made a comment. He had reported that the Rangers were interested in him, and Adam was like, why?
Yeah.
And you like, there's nothing he brings to the table that makes – I think I only gave – when I did my draft grades – I think I gave him a D, maybe an F. Yeah. I don't know. I definitely gave Hellberg an F. But, like, the Rangers like him because of his size. He was a captain for the Swiss team. And even, you know, he played a little bit of Swiss professional hockey. I think he was in the B League.
Yeah, he was.
And that's great. And then that did not even come close to translating to the OHL
he's
level, which is shocking.
Though. I mean.
Yeah. He's good. He's decent. He's not big, but he's not small. And he uses his size well. And I don't think he's a total throwaway. I think he can become a third pairing defenseman. But you know, again, number one, they should be going for higher upside, and there's still players with higher upside.
Yeah,
fourth
round, you can still.
If your fourth round pick becomes a third pairing defenseman in the NHL, like, fantastic. If that's the end result, but on day one, that should not be the optimistic outlook.
Yeah,
you know, I look at Tim Gettinger. You know, that's a guy that I thought, you know, when the Rangers drafted him, this is a guy who had 20 goal potential, maybe borderline second line ability, and you know, he's not going to turn out into that, but. You want that safety net. That's, you know, the point is, on day one, you should be thinking more. With Nico Gross, he skates well, and the one kind of saving grace there, or hope, the last hope with him, is that it's tough to be a 17-year-old, one, you know, moving to a completely different part of the world. By yourself, with no one around you that you know, living with strangers, playing on a smaller rink, playing for a completely new team. And, you know, Swiss development's not that great. And I think Corey Pramann made this point that you look at a lot of guys who come from those kind of countries where they're not traditional hockey markets, and it takes them a while to really, you know, hit their gear. So if there's one saving grace, or is that, hey, like, we haven't seen the best of him yet. I'm still not convinced what the best will be is something meaningful, but as opposed to Zjelberg, I think there's kind of that, you know, hey, like, let's wait and see aspect to it.
And again, it's okay to think this way and to still be rooting for them to succeed.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
That's no one's rooting against him. I mean, the point that I was going to make was, as good of a first day as I thought the Rangers had, as good as Friday was, Saturday really could not have gone any worse.
Yeah. Yep.
Rounds 2 through 7, the best pick the Rangers made, and I'm not including Joey Keane because I didn't like it at the time, was Riley Hughes, because he was a huge upside pick that they got in the 7th round.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, somebody that a few of the talking heads thought was one of the biggest sleepers in the draft.
Yeah.
So, like, great. And there were players mixed in there that, you know, are not terrible picks. It's just the Rangers did so much reaching, and if the Rangers don't take Lindbom and they take Akil Thomas or Ryan McLeod or who else, you know, Bode Wild, whatever it is, any of those three players that were available at 39, and the Rangers do every other pick the same way, you can defend it because they use their first four picks on quality players. It was the goalie at 39 that just really threw the whole second day off and just hoof. Anyway, we should get to questions because we have 1,000 of them.
Okay.
This one is from last week, but I have to read it. Johnny Alo, who is a patron, he wants to know the story of Mike fighting a dog with pennies. But the other reason why I'm reading this is because he was listening to the episode 102, which was the most recent one, and got a ticket for listening to it. So listen to us in the car, but, like, put the phone down. Anyway, the story of Mike with the pennies is basically there was a giant dog, like, in the Sandlot, except the neighbor had a fence that the dog...
I would love to know why you're telling my child.
Do you want to tell it?
You're
no, ready. Now you have to.
How about I want tell to... it? I'll tell it.
Yeah, Adam will tell it.
Yeah, go ahead, Adam. Yeah.
Adam will tell it.
I don't know this story.
Yeah, I figured. So
I know it really well, though. Go ahead, Mike. I want to hear it from your mouth.
All right. I'm at my cousin's house, and my cousins decide to... Do you remember the old Nerf bow and arrow?
Yeah.
I do.
And so,
quality toy.
Yep.
The neighbor next door has a huge dog. It's a St. Bernard. And, you know, I don't know if you've seen the Beethoven movies, but it's a very, very large dog, especially for kids. Anyway, this part of my family, the cousins were like the outdoorsy people. The Murphys are like bookish and not athletic, and we don't like the sun. But these are the cousins where one of my cousins, I came home from school to see him sharpening a long stick on my driveway into a spear. And then taking a normal leaf, like any old leaf, and then a poison ivy leaf, and rubbing poison ivy on the top of the spear.
Chemical warfare, nice.
To add another element to this. And, like, that's the sort of people this was. They're a different sort of person. Anyway, my aunt gave me a tin, a Band-Aid tin filled with pennies, And I was just standing in the yard because I hadn't been around dogs before. My parents wisely didn't trust me to raise anything like a dog. It was a good decision. But my brother and older cousins were running around trying to hunt this animal. And I'm just standing in the driveway. It was a really long driveway that went uphill, holding this penny, terrified, among pine trees on either side of me, like a lane of trees. And I just slowly turned because I thought I heard something, and just passing right in front of me is just this whoosh of brown and white fur. And I just remember just rattling the pennies, like, rapidly and realizing it's not doing a damn thing. But that's all I really remember. I don't remember anything other than that moment of pure, just unfiltered fear. It's just terror. Of just all I have to keep this beast away from me is pennies in a tin can.
Why didn't you throw it at it?
Because he needed the noise. He needed the noise.
The pennies are supposed to be something the owners train this dog with. Like, it's a noise it was supposed to respond to.
Did you, like, know this, or were you just like, oh, like, that sounds like something that's true?
No, I was told this, and I believed it at face value.
I will tell you, that is a very common training tool for dogs, because the high pitch of the pennies hitting against the tin bothers their ears.
Yeah.
This dog gave no fucks at all. Just, he could not have cared less that I was rattling pennies.
It just attacked you. That's really one of the greatest stories ever told.
It's like turning and seeing like a velociraptor just.
But my issue though, like your cousin who was doing the poison ivy thing. The only person the dog. It's just going to get on the dog's fur and then it's going to infect the people.
I didn't say this cousin was hunting this dog with a spear. They were hunting it with a Nerf bone arrow.
Yeah, but also, like, let's say the dog gets, like, infected with poison ivy. Like, it's not going to be, like, it's not going to be, one, like, an immediate thing, and two, it's not going to be like, oh, wait, that's the guy who gave me poison ivy. I better never go over there again.
Again, you're judging these actions of children as adults.
That's correct.
That is not fair to do.
I think it's absolutely fair. As the judge and jury on this, I will allow.
I'm going to give this dog poison ivy like that.
I will 100% allow this.
I will reiterate again. The spear was unrelated to this dog. The poison ivy spear was being prepared for a separate dog.
I see how the spear part works. Like, oh, like, that's going to make an immediate impact. Like, that dog's going to be hurt, and it's going to know, oh, like, I just got hurt going near that kid. But it's not going to register, like, I got itchy, you know, 48 hours later.
So wait, here's the most important question. There were two dogs on the loose?
No, there's so many more layers to this story, and we have so many questions to get to.
Yeah, but I do want to know at least a quick version.
All right, the quick version of the spear is the house that I grew up in, next to us, they were, like, tore down the forest, like the woods that became the other houses on my block. Mm-hmm. And there were just like mounds of dirt, like, you know, like they had bulldozed these mounds of dirt. And my brothers and cousins, because we all grew up in the same town, my cousin, I'm trying to not use names here,
probably for the best.
I told the seagull story on our like other podcast, the silly podcast, and I realized, like, oh, these people have children now.
They need to
These mounds of dirt, we would be running from dirt mound to dirt mound, and, like, my brothers and older cousins would, like, push us down. It was very Lord of the Flies. It was very intense. And at some point, we started to steal building materials from these neighboring, from this construction site next to our house and building a clubhouse. And the workers would come in the morning, see all the wood was gone, tear down our clubhouse, and then when we discovered this, we would be furious. So we began preparing weapons and leaving notes for them. Like, I remember specifically, we had, like, Happy Meal toys of, like, Cabbage Patch Kids, and we popped off all the heads and glued them on a row staring at the building site of, like, don't touch our clubhouse.
Can you just imagine for a minute being one of the workers coming to work, like, you're already pissed, it's raining outside, it's 6 a.m, you get out, like, just the crack ass of dawn is coming over the horizon, and you're greeted with, like, eight just Cabbage Patch Kids heads staring at you.
$100 of wood missing.
Just from the insane kids that live in the house.
Yeah.
I would never go back. I would immediately quit. I don't think that's...
But I was young enough, I just had to go along with it.
Yeah, of course. Just, no, but I have to say, there's absolute a level of brilliance that I just cannot...
Somewhere along the line, there was a small dog involved. And for whatever reason, I think the spear was meant for the dog, but don't hurt dogs. Dog shouldn't be speared, friends. But I'm pretty sure it was like a Scottish terrier, which, you know, a little Scotty, which is just a dog you could literally punt through a field goal.
We're the biggest dog supporters here.
Yeah.
Adam has Hank.
I do.
I have Stanley. So
Mike loves all dogs.
Mike does love all dogs, but sometimes, you know, you just have to spear a dog, I guess.
No.
Shayna has Zuki.
Shayna does have
something. Oh my god, that was that question. That was totally worth.
You know what? I hope that was worth your ticket, buddy.
Oh god, it absolutely was. Oh boy, that story was even better than what you told. Even better, which is
Yeah, it's funny. Like when you have little snapshots, and I remember, I think I was the one who had to glue these little Cabbage Patch Kid heads onto like a 2x4, and then like using like you know like those markers, you would pop them and they smelled like berry.
Yeah.
It was blue.
Yeah.
Like I had to write like a threatening note in like berry marker on this 2x4, like stop touching our clubhouse. Just period. It, which makes it all the creepier. It's like, well,
I'll tell you what's even better.
Just don't touch the clubhouse. Period.
What's even better is that in 5 or 6 years, somebody's going to renovate that house and they're going to bust the walls open they're going to see a 2x4 pipe that's going to say, don't touch our clubhouse. And they're going to be like, what haunting happened here? Yeah, they're never going to come back.
What in God's name happened
to them? Oh, no, did you see the story about the guy, the woman and the guy were re-renovating their bathroom. They ripped the wall open and there was an Asian couple with a picture with a rabbit, right? Or some type of an animal. And it was like, hey, we're the people who renovated this bathroom. What we did wasn't good enough for you? Which is just the single greatest, creepiest way to go about leaving some memory of yourself in a home. I actually gutted our house and we found lube and cartoon porn in the ceilings.
Nice.
So
in the ceiling.
In the ceiling. And an envelope that I was convinced was full of money that was actually full of like court citations that the previous owner just absolutely
bailed on. A little
different
than money.
So, yeah, I thought, I was like, oh, this is the greatest thing
ever. I really
hope
you had on several layers of glove.
The depravity of the photos, some of them were real porn and some of them were like hentai. Mm-hmm. Hentai? What is it? Hentai? I think it's hentai. It was insane. And this was like a 60-year-old man, so... In the attic.
Oh.
Not even the attic, actually. The basement ceiling.
Sounds like he had a young soul. A young heart.
A young heart, yes. Okay. That was amazing.
Next.
The entire time of that was amazing.
Next question.
Larry Bubbs. Should we be concerned about Kravtsov being a flash in the pan from his KHL performance in the playoffs last year? Adam, will defer to you on that one.
The answer is yes. That's a legitimate possibility. And that's... I don't say this as like a way to admonish the Rangers or anything, but like that's just the reality of. Look, if he did that for an entire season, he would have gone, you know, third overall at worst. So that's the give and take of it is that, you know, with upside comes uncertainty.
The risk you take.
Yeah. So that's what they did. They went for upside and. Fully, like, you know, we discussed this earlier, but you look at, like, Noah, you know, there was Noah Dobson or Evan Bouchard on the board. Those are guys who are very comfortably going to be top four defensemen in the NHL. But the Rangers went for a guy.
Like with Anderson, you miss out on that.
Yeah, the Rangers went for a guy that could conceivably be, you know, the second best, maybe even first best top forward on a contender.
Yeah, they went for the game breaker. So where they picked.
So that's, you can't. But that is the risk. That is the give and take.
It's the million-dollar question.
The scales of justice, if you will.
Yeah.
Could end up with the Yakupov.
And just the other point, the Rangers seem to believe that playoff performance proves that extra gear because Anderson's playoffs in the SHL 2 years ago were a big reason why the Rangers ended up making him the selection.
Yep.
So,
and I wholeheartedly disagree with that.
Yeah, I would
philosophically.
Fully agree.
But the other thing with Kravtsov is that, you know, especially with these players playing in the top men's leagues where they're kind of in limited roles. So scouts, you know, what do we have here? It's hard to say. So they heavily rely on the junior tournaments to gauge it, where they're playing against teenagers, players, you know, more age appropriate competition.
Yeah, they're peers, right?
Yeah. So that's kind of like you can kind of get that context. All right, well, here's how he looks against these peers. Kravtsov barely played any of these games. He was stupidly not a part of Russia's World Junior Championship team, U-20 World Junior Championship team, and they didn't exactly look great for that decision because they completely busted out of the tournament. He was too old for the U-18 World Championships, I believe.
So it was a really unique case.
And then there was other politics going on in regards to Russia. He was too old for the Five Nations in February. So, or rather Four Nations. But point being, like, there wasn't that kind of context, that kind of buffer to say, all right, well, we have this, even if it's a small sample, here's how, you know, these 10 games, how he looked against age-appropriate players. Rangers or any other team, they didn't have that to fall back on with Kravtsov. So it's really going in with a high level of uncertainty in what they have here. And that's kind of where the statistical research is important, talking to his coaches. I looked at his numbers in Russian juniors the year before, and they weren't mind-blowing, but they were within range of Nikita Kucherov, of Pavel Buchnevich.
I did that comparison.
Forgetting one other, but point being, like, I don't think it's a situation where, like, hey, here's a bad prospect who, you know, kind or not, you know, here's a not great prospect who just had, you know, the greatest 2 months of his life and that screwed the Rangers. I don't think it's like that. I think certainly it was a justified selection in the area. It's that uncertainty is kind of there. They're going to live and die by it.
Yeah.
It makes it fun.
It definitely does.
Let's see. Jim Dangles.
Jim Dangles.
What prospects are you most excited to see at Traverse City?
Okay. So most excited to see, I'll interpret that to mean which players do I think I can learn about the most?
Sure. Because, just change the entire structure. Because,
like,
look, question.
Like, if, you know,
No, you answer how you want.
Well, no, I'm just saying, like, there are certain players. It's like, I enjoy watching this player play hockey.
Yeah, you know? But there's like, more.
Who won't be there? Kravtsov isn't going to be there. Miller's not going to be there.
A lot of guys are not going to be there.
Lundqvist isn't going to be there. So right away, the first three picks of this year's draft. I mean, Ty Ronning seems to be.
I think
like because he also asks who will lead the team in points. Like Ronning is going to be the most. Like, is Hayek going to be there?
Yeah, he'll be there for sure.
Howden might be there. I guess
for sure be there. And then it's, I don't know. Will Ronning?
So maybe Howden.
Will Pionk be there? I don't know. Will
D'Angelo?
Will Hedel and Anderson? I don't think D'Angelo will, but Hedel and Anderson might be.
Would you send either of them? I don't know if I would.
It depends on fit. How are they in terms of fitness?
Anderson has played so much hockey.
That's the thing there. I could see it being beneficial for Hedel just because he didn't do it last year.
If Hedel's there, he's going to lead the team in points.
Yeah, you're looking for different things out of, like, what are you trying to do with the tournament, right? Like, it's different things for different players. For some, it's you want to see them in certain situations. For some, it's like an introduction to, like, hey, like, you tore up, you know, junior hockey. Now here's how it is against real competition. It's kind of a wake-up type call type thing, like an introduction to reality. For some players, it's about fitness and such. So there's a lot of factors there. So I don't know. Which player am I most excited to see? Maybe Joey Keane, because he's kind of that player that, like, hey, he can really elevate himself into, you know, not just being just another prospect. If he's kind of in that territory where he has the ability, the potential to really do a phenomenal job that tournament and really boost his stock. So maybe I would say he's a good answer for that.
I would think Howden and Hayek would be the two that you could really get a good look at, you know what I mean, where they're not playing in the juniors, and I know both of them played in the World Juniors.
Yeah, you also have that World Juniors, you know, experience, and you have, you know, a bunch of seasons in junior hockey to fall back on. For me personally, again, like, I've seen plenty of them. So for me, a guy like Joey Keane, you know, like, one of the more, someone who has more to prove, So I think him. Who else is on this list? Maybe Lindgren, because again, he's a kind of guy.
Lindgren was Mike's answer.
Yeah, he's a guy who can say "Hey, I'm not just another prospect. Like, I'm going to enter training camp, a meaningful player." Because look, the Rangers, it doesn't make or break a player, but it certainly sets the tone. I mean, the beginning and the end for Alexei Bereglazov last year was he looked absolutely terrible in Traverse City. And, if he looked good in training camp, that would have been whatever. But it sets the tone for sure, and it changes how the Rangers will, teams like to say, yeah, we give everyone a chance, but that's just not realistic. You have so many bodies in camp and so many decisions to make. You have to
see what you could do.
You have to kind of prioritize your focus and energy. So this is kind of that first step, like, hey, who's going to separate themselves? So I don't think Howden and Hayek, like, the Rangers know what they have there. You know, those guys, you want to see them play well, but they're going to enter training camp meaningful prospects anyway. For this tournament, it's kind of who's the guy that's kind of just in the middle of the pack that has the ability to put himself forward and make himself a more meaningful name entering training camp. So I look at Joey Keane, not because he's going to make the roster this year. He's going to the OHL, but in terms of his stock, he can improve that dramatically for sure. And Lindgren, if he wants to become a serious contender for a roster spot, that's kind of, he's going to have to get out the gate looking great. So I look at those two.
And it's harder to judge players like Lindgren too, because you're not expecting the offense. So it's not exactly a tournament where a defenseman can prove their defensive toolbox.
Yeah, but Traverse City, look, they do very basic systems because you have a bunch of guys who,
never played
all,
together.
Yeah,
before.
And like a lot of them are new to the organization, and you have like 5 days to say, hey, here's what we're doing. You don't have time to run intricate systems, and you don't really want to anyway. You just kind of want to see, hey, who's has this individual ability? How can they fit into basic structures? So you're looking for that kind of individual, this guy had a good shift here doing this individual thing. So
I like this next question. Alex Khalifa, outside of MSG, what is your favorite venue for watching live hockey of any kind? Mike, we're starting with you.
I'm biased.
And
I like going, I have the advantage of being a member of the media and covering the NWHL. Mm-hmm. So I get to watch games pretty much wherever I want to. The NWHL is pretty lax with where the media goes, so I just watch games like right up against the glass near the penalty box and hear players chirp at each other. So that's a lot of fun for me, which is the Barnabas Health Hockey House, which is the practice rink of the Devils at the Prudential Center.
Adam?
Yeah, this isn't a great question for me because I honestly have not been to that many rinks.
Here we go.
Here's the sob story. There's no sob stories. Madison Square Garden, Nassau Coliseum, the old, not the Prudential Center, the Continental Airlines Arena. That was a dump.
You want to hear something crazy
I've
about
that? I've been to Verizon Center. I guess I'll say Verizon Center just because I don't have that many options.
Joseph Fortunato has never seen a professional hockey game not at Madison Square Garden.
Wow.
Never once. However,
that's amazing.
I'm going to say my Quinnipiac Bobcats. Mm. I love watching games from the bank, but I'm going to give a little bit of a betrayal answer here. Ingles, which is where Yale plays, is one of the coolest hockey arenas on the planet. It's all wood. Top looks like literally the underside of like a Viking ship. And it's so intimate that it's loud. And we used to go there for Quinnipiac Yale games, and it was an unbelievable experience. And the corner boards, the boards are a foot lower than regulation, so you could legitimately get killed by a puck, which is fun. Before we get into the next question, you know what else is fun, Michael?
A good night's sleep.
Oh, you see, you knew exactly where I was going with this one. Casper products are cleverly designed to mimic human curves, providing supportive comfort for all kinds of bodies, which includes Mike's deliciously firm and strong body, Adam's string beanie bottom, and my melon shaped
bottom
body. I said bottom. I didn't mean to say bottom. I meant to say body.
That's inappropriate.
Have to contact
you spend
HR
one third
here
of your life sleeping. I am HR, actually. We've been through that too. You spend one third of your life sleeping, so you should be comfortable when you do it. Spend the money. But here's the good news. You don't have to spend as much money using Casper. You can get the Casper, which is the original Casper mattress, which combines multiple supportive memory foams for a quality sleep surface with the right amount of both sink and bounce. They have over 20,000 reviews
and bounce,
and an average of 4.8 stars against Casper, Amazon, and Google. Casper's becoming the internet's favorite mattress. You, listening right now, yes, wow, you, should subscribe to us. Give us 5 stars and leave a nice comment. They're affordable prices because Casper cuts out the middleman and sells directly to, once again, you. Hassle-free returns if you're not completely satisfied. And free shipping and returns in the United States and Canada, which you may be listening to because this is a hockey podcast.
I want to make this clear. Never once has the Casper Mattress Company sacrificed a small child to appease an old pagan god.
Correct.
They've never done that.
Wow.
Never once have they done that.
Right to your door. They'll deliver it, the mattress, right to your door in a small, how do they do that, size box.
They've never smuggled blood diamonds out of Africa through their mattresses.
Never done any of that. But if you go to casper.com/blueshirtbanter, casper.com/blueshirtbanter, and use the promo code BlueShirtBanter, you will get $50 towards select mattresses. Terms and conditions do apply. Once again, that is casper.com/BlueShirtBanter. The promo code is BlueShirtBanter.
They've never developed nuclear weapons.
You know, I'm amazed that, like, we cannot get $1 million sponsorships just because of, like, look at these polished, uninterrupted.
They're unbelievably
polished.
You spend
a third of your life sleeping on a mattress, and then think of all the time you spend trying to make a baby on a mattress.
That's also true. You need the sink and the bounce. That's the,
either,
you know,
with
the push
someone
and the pull
else or
motion
by yourself. Oh my God. You know.
As somebody who has had sex once in my life and created a child.
At least once.
Could have been proof. In vitro.
It 100% could have been, but I'm not going to tell you that that's true because that ruins my I'm not a virgin blogger mentality. Aiden Barr, given the Rangers' prospect depth, do you think Mark Stahl finishes his contract with the Rangers? Yes. I think that's a different question, yeah, because
different question.
Who cares about the prospect depth? Stahl is still bad. But for where the Rangers are right now, it really doesn't make sense to buy him out. That's where
buying him out hurts more than holding on to him for two more years. Or,
I think
hold on and let it happen.
I think where it could get a bit interesting, and it's a matter of if not, or it's a matter of when, not if, but it could, the sooner it becomes like more uncomfortable, the sooner I have to deal with it. Like right now, they have plausible deniability in that, like, we all know he stinks, but, like, the Rangers could say, oh, you know, he's still in his early 30s, and, you know, the Rangers don't have that many players just, you know, pushing at the door. They have a lot of players in contention for roster spots, but they don't have a lot of guys where it's like, all right, this guy needs to be on the NHL roster. Like, you do not have a choice. In a year, that could, you know, depending on how things go with the number of players, that could be the case. It could be the case in 6 months, after, you know, into the season. It could be the case a year in, 18 months. But point being, that's kind of how I think that could factor into it, is once the Rangers have to say, like, look,
once there needs to be
we need a spot open, like, you're not going to be, you're going to sit in the press box, like, we don't want you there, you don't want to be there, like, we got, what, you know, let's deal with this. I think that's how that can factor in.
Yeah, but I think when you when we talk about that, there's also, I think, something to be said about, I feel like this organization is not going to be able to escape the, oh, we need a leader for all these kids.
Yeah, but, like, the thing I brought up also, like, forget about, like, that concept aside. Like, it's just so hard to have the worst player on your team, you know, say, like, after, you know, a 6-1 loss or whatever, hey, like, we need to be better, blah, blah, blah. Like, it's just, that message is just going to ring hollow, you know? And I'm sure I'm sure, like, day-to-day at practice with pointers or on the road, like, yeah, sure, he can, you know, sure, he's a very good guy and he can provide that kind of presence. But at the end of the day, you know, there's a reason that there are never fourth line captains, or there rarely are. You know, it's teams, your leaders have to be players who are producing for you and who are not just good speakers and good, you know, on the airplane and in the hotel room, but they've got to, you know, provide leadership on the ice. And so,
well, if you believe the Rangers internally, they haven't had a ton of guys who have been good speakers as captains.
Yeah,
a couple of captains. So, Joe M. Mike, what's the number one way that you or I would eventually physically harm each other? God.
The number one way?
I'm going to say a spear covered in poison ivy.
Wow.
That's my answer. Also, his more important question, who has ruined the podcast more over the years? And it's 100% me.
I think what I would do is I would be like, Joe, I feel anxious. I just hold me. And then you would hold me, and then I would bite you right in the throat. I'd go straight for your carotid artery.
That's, you know what? That's,
and just let your warm blood fill my mouth.
That's what the dog would do.
Spit your own blood into your eyes and blind you, and then just keep doing that.
I think okay. Mike would just rattle a tin can full of pennies.
Yeah, and it wouldn't work, but I would run away eventually anyway.
And then my hands would smell from the pennies.
Clem Fandango! I know the odds of a majority of making... Okay, this is worded strange. I know the odds of a majority of them making it to free agency, but if they do, and New York Rangers can only get one free agent next season, okay, based on what you think the New York Rangers needs are, would you prefer Panarin, Seguin, Carlson, Stone, or Duchesne?
It's Panarin for me, and it's not even close. Like, no.
I get that Carlson is the sexy pick. He has half an ankle.
He's also
one and a half ankles on his body.
And yeah. People don't realize how good Panarin is. Like,
yeah, Panarin's one of like the top 10 players in the NHL.
He's 26 today. He's unbelievable in every way, in terms of point production, in terms of like the underlying numbers. And I've seen the pre-shot data. Like, he just drives offense in a way few players can
carry a line.
Like, I think
the best part about Panarin is that he's supposedly wants to come to the Rangers.
Yeah.
But Columbus has less than a month to trade him, where he will talk about future contracts.
Yep.
And if they don't, he's hitting free agency.
So he says.
Well, wouldn't you make that claim?
Yeah, if Columbus says to him, hey, the Rangers called, they want to make a trade. Well, sure, the Rangers
it's different.
That's my point, is like, I think it's a softer deadline. I think totally he's going to say, look, I don't want to talk contract out. Like, the season, I want to just focus on hockey. But like, I think at some point down the road, here's this team that really likes you and they're ready to offer X amount of money, you know, like that's the other thing. But yeah, sure, Columbus is on a short lease. I think he's gonna hit free agency. I think he will.
Last question. Jeff D, cast two Rangers in a remake of a buddy movie of your choosing.
Two past
Rangers? I'm gonna choose Step. Let's do Step Brothers. And I feel like Zuccarello's got to be one.
Yeah.
Probably. There's a lot of silence here. No one agrees with me on that.
I guess I'm just thinking of what other movies. I
don't know. I'm thinking
Step Brothers is just like, so like, it's like the easy answer. You know what I mean?
It's the easy answer.
It's the Rangers roster from last season. And I'm just turning this question on its head.
Can we do Mean Girls? Let's do Mean Girls.
I was going to say, you do the movie Alive, which is about a plane that crashes in the mountains, and then they run out of resources, they begin to eat people.
That's Lord of the Flies.
Team, I believe. Well, no, it's also the movie called Alive.
Yeah. It's like, oh, like, here's this movie, and the plot is that, you know.
I think it's based on something that actually happened, though.
I think it is. It's on the, isn't it a soccer team? Manchester City or Manchester United?
No.
Didn't they have a plane crash?
Yeah. Everyone died.
Everyone died.
They didn't land on an island and go Lord of the Flies.
No. I'm talking about Mike's movie Alive, not Lord of the Flies. Because did they all die?
He was saying they survived and like had to eat people. Like,
yeah, I thought that happened.
The Manchester United soccer team did not eat each other to stay alive.
It is a Uruguayan rugby team that crashed in 1970.
Okay, that may be what I'm thinking. Did they have to eat each other?
Oh, yeah.
That's what I'm thinking of. I knew there was also a terrible plane crash with the...
Yeah, Zuccarello would survive.
Wait a minute. I'm sorry. I need to hit the timeout button here for a second.
God damn it.
A very friendly question of what buddy movie has now turned into, you want to see who Zuccarello is going to eat to survive?
Yeah, with tears freezing on his face from the high altitude. And
Is the dog there?
Yeah, the dog's going to be there.
Because you'd probably eat him first because you're a monster.
It is a dog of the mountains. It'll naturally be there. It'll probably bring Zook, you know, a little barrel veil around
it. Forgetting Sarah Marshall, Zuccarello and Broussard.
That's not a buddy movie.
Yeah, well, we're changing the whole thing now. We're changing the whole... Mike turned it on his head. He's talking about cannibalism, where Zuccarello has to forget about Broussard.
Oh.
Well, I'm a fan of that one. I think that's a great idea.
Hagman would be better because He has much more long flowing hair.
Yeah, I know, but Zouk and Broussard were the original boys. The bromance. I don't know,
Joe.
What a totally unsatisfying answer we gave to that question. Like, wow.
You didn't even answer. You haven't even given an answer.
I wanted to be Mean Girls.
All right, fine. Mean Girls. Who's your cast?
Well, obviously Zuccarello is in there. Like, that's just no matter what your movie is.
It has to be Zouk.
It could be I Am Legend, you know, like, whatever.
Zuccarello's I mean, in Mike's fantasy, Zuccarello's eating other Rangers, so
yeah. Well, it doesn't necessarily need to be a positive thing. Will Smith has to kill his own dog, I'm saying.
My God.
Yeah, anyway.
All right.
Zuccarello. Zuccarello. I don't know. Who is...
I was just trying to tie it back to dog death. I'm sorry.
Zuccarello. Who else is in there?
Well, then everybody else is bad.
There is. I think they're bad. I don't know.
I think the buddy movie is Kreider and Booch because of the fun language thing. And because Booch is just...
That would be so overplayed after, like, the first scene, though.
Well, it's a Hollywood movie. It's what do you want
from me? I'm 100%
I'm trying to make an action movie where
forgetting Derek Broussard, where Zuccarello falls in love with Henrik Lundqvist.
That's terrible. That's so awful.
Mila Kunis.
It's not even funny.
It's not supposed to be funny. It's a movie about him getting over a very close friend who broke up with him.
Forgetting Sarah Marshall's a comedy. It's not a drama.
I'm changing. You know what? It is going to be funny. It's going to be hysterical.
I just can't see it.
I
mean, Step Brothers.
Step Brothers, I thought, was the easy answer.
It is. That's what I'm saying.
And Adam made me feel bad about myself.
Yeah. You know what? I changed my mind.
I hope you would change your mind.
All right. You need to leave me alone. Stop being a bully. We have company on the show. I'm going to say Tommy Boy is the movie.
Never seen that one either. Yeah.
God damn it. God damn it. Yeah. Forget it. I'm done.
Mystery Alaska with Zuccarello?
That's not a buddy movie at all. Your question deserved better. We failed you. Please buy a Casper mattress.
How's Guy from
Speaking
Montana
of failing here? You, Alex Gardner, Alexander Ricard, Armael Kissinger,
Guy from Montana.
Andre Shikagoff, Anthony Viola, Arch Williams, Bob Cowa, Chris B., Chris Habibi, Dan Carozzi, Daniel DeGem, Danny Santiago, David L. Singer, Eric Cohn, Fancy Lawrence, Gabriel Vargas, 50, Grumpy Smokey, Igor Zatlovsky, James Dangles, John J. Porter, John Reppy, Johnny Lowe, Keith Franchillo, Matt Bader, Guy from Montana,
yes.
Michael Silvers, yeah. Mike Offit, Robert Courtney, Sean Taggart, Stink Fleeman, Tall Guy Robert, Thomas Osa, Trevor Kempner, and Zachary Zetlin. Thank you all for donating. You all rock.
Zetlin should be the admiral of a space fleet.
Fancy Lawrence and Tall Guy Robert are without a doubt.
Well, yeah. That's the buddy movie we need.
No, what about, like, Shawshank Redemption? Like, who's helping Lundqvist escape? Like, who's sacrificing the body?
Adam, this is good. Vigneault is the warden.
Like, who's the one, you know?
Yeah, Red.
Who's the one?
Well, wait a minute. Can we swap this out for a second, though? What if Vigneault is the warden and Buchnevich is the prisoner?
Buchnevich? No. It's got to be Lundqvist, man.
What you need to do is Lundqvist is Red.
Lundqvist could be Morgan Freeman.
He's been there too long, right?
Yeah.
You need Andy Dufresne is the young guy who's come in to save him, like to connect him to his heart again.
Oh God, who's that? I don't think that's anyone.
So who's a young guy or a guy who's joined the team that has a connection with Hank that is put into somewhere he doesn't deserve, which is a rebuild? It's
kind of Anderson.
I wouldn't say he's in a position he doesn't deserve.
No, but he knows Hank, yeah. And he's a young guy.
Yeah, but...
Who else are you getting on that list?
Maybe... I don't know, man.
I'm going to say it's Kevin Shattenkirk.
Shattenkirk is fine, but he didn't know him.
Yeah, but that's not like a... I can't see Shattenkirk and Lundqvist, like, hugging it out, like, yo, man, like, I did this for you.
I mean, it's...
You
it's
just know Hank goalie. Would climb through the tunnel of poop. And come out perfectly.
What if we just retrodate it to, like, because the Rangers were kind of similar kind of crap in, like, 2009, 2010, you know, and then suddenly they became good 2012.
Put Eric Christensen on there?
No, he's not. God. Who's the one who saves, like, Lundqvist in, like, 2012? Is it Brad Richards? It's probably Brad Richards.
No, Brad Richards isn't a terrible. Gabrick? Gabrick's not a bad choice either.
He was gone, though. He was gone.
Ricky Nash.
Yeah, you're right. He was gone there for the
2012 season. He was really good. But I don't
know. Yeah, well, that's
maybe Nash, but like, they didn't have that buddy. Maybe it's Zuccarello.
Well, like, Andy and Red weren't, like, playing badminton in the goddamn prison yard.
No, but, like, they had that, like, deep, like, connection.
Camaraderie.
Yeah, like, that deep, like, mutual, like, understanding of, like, hey, like, we're in this together, like, that sacrifice. Yeah.
All right, well, I think we're...
And then they were building boats together in San Juan Tenejo.
Yeah, forgetting where they lived. All right, thank you all for listening. We appreciate it.
Everyone go buy a mattress.
You can find us on Spreaker now, actually. We're moving away from Blog Talk Radio, so...
Joe, why are we moving away from Blog Talk Radio?
Because Spreaker's better. All right, we will...
Take that, Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, talk to
you all. Thank you, Adam, for joining us.
Blog Talk Radio, actually.
And for answering our questions.
Yeah, thank you. And good night, everybody. Mike is a whale.